Yes, welcome back to World Football Daily here. It is Friday's edition of the show. It's the 4th of January, and I cannot wait to get down and dirty with a man who wiped the floor of me when we played I Know The Score back in the end of 2012. It's 2013, and if we get another chance to do it, I'm definitely going to take him down this next time. Mr. Christian Hennig's joining us on the show, writer for ESPN. Christian, how are you doing, man? How was Christmas and New Year? Busy whilst everybody else was taking a few days off?
It was, but I think it's disingenuous to complain when you're paid to cover football.
Yeah, it's not too bad a life, is it, for folks like yourself?
It's not. I think it rivals only the players in terms of enjoyment.
If only the salary was the same, right? If only the salary was the same. Well, there's been plenty going on, especially in the last few days with the transfer window opening and everything. We've got FA Cup football coming this weekend as well. Firstly, Christian, the FA Cup, we had Rebecca Lowe talking about this last season, saying that she still loves the cups, she loves the magic. Do you get that same feeling when the FA Cup comes around, especially the third round with the potential for big upsets?
It has that potential always. I think as a competition, it's evolved in the sense that the bigger teams are more inclined to give debuts to young players, but it's all about perception, really, because if you think about it, there's a chance to see you know, a young David Beckham or a young Paul Scholes or, in City's case, Kerim Reckitt, these kind of players who normally wouldn't be afforded first-team opportunities, will get this chance in the Cup, and for some it can make them, for some it can break them. But it's about just appreciating its history and also understanding that there will be other moments to come. Cup upsets won't just stop happening because the game has become more gulfed in terms of teams having more money compared to the lesser sides.
Where do you see the upsets potentially coming then? We've got a number of Premier League sides taking on other Premier League sides, but we've also got games like Tottenham against Coventry. Where do the upsets come, do you think, in this FA Cup third round weekend?
I think Cardiff could be on for a bit of trouble, just because it's not an easy game for them to have to go and play. I also, the pessimist in me says that Brighton stand a good chance, given that Newcastle are firmly up the creek without their paddles. And Ipswich as well, they're in fantastic form under Mick McCarthy, and obviously by contrast, Villa they're not in crisis, but I think they're devoid of confidence and there's little to cheer about. And if Ipswich can kind of sit off a bit and soak up the pressure and slowly turn Villa Park against the home side, then they could easily pick up a victory there.
I mean, this is a Villa side that completely capitulated over the Christmas break, conceded 15 goals in three games. It's dire for anybody. When you look at this Aston Villa side, they played so well against Anfield just before the kind of busy December period. And then as soon as they got into the December, they seemed almost overwhelmed by the number of games. Do you think having a bit of a break or at least a regular week's rest in between games now, they'll be able to get back on form? Or is this a Villa side that just overachieved at Anfield and can't and it is going to be in a relegation battle for the remainder of the second half of the season?
I think they'll be in the bottom half of the second half of the season. That's a fair assumption to make. But you have to remember that this side is very much in transition. It's got a lot of young players, not just Benteke players, like Ashley Westwood, Lowton at fullback. I mean, the defence, I think, was all under 22 at one point with Baker and Clark and Lehigh in there. So you have to, as a consequence of that, appreciate that there are going to be weeks which aren't very fun to be a Villa fan. There are also going to be instances at Liverpool where you see the potential of those players and why they were brought to the football club. I think that realistically you need to temper your expectations slightly and you need to accept that this season will probably be a bit arduous to watch and there'll be moments where it's not so nice. But if you contrast it with the season before with Alex McLeish, I can guarantee you'll have a lot more happy weekends than sad ones because his football was devoid of anything interesting. And because of that, you do need to give them time to grow as players. I can imagine it does become very frustrating and the temptation is to kind of, you know, really get on the players. But with such young minds there, I think that will cause more problems than it will achieve because, you know, as I said, players like Ashley Westwood were playing in the lower leagues prior to this season. So they need time to acclimatise to the pressure, to the new surroundings and the situations, as well as the improved quality of play they're going to be facing.
And you were talking about the kind of the magic of the FA Cup, and I said Tottenham obviously taking on Coventry. Coventry have been a dire side over the last couple of seasons, slipped down now into League One. potential for an upset at White Hart Lane. We're hearing today that they're wearing the old kits from the 1987 FA Cup final where they beat Tottenham Hotspur 3-2. Is that any sort of mental game at all that they're trying to bring into it? Do you give them a half a chance of pulling off a miracle against AVB's men?
I think possibly they're wearing old kits because Coventry are a bit shy of money at the moment. so perhaps they're having to raid the old kit bags. No, I mean, joking aside, I think, yeah, they probably appreciate that Tottenham are far more talented than them and have a lot more ability in their squad. So any kind of mental advantage you can give yourself, any even slight inkling of tossing the same coin, walking out in the same order, so anything will be used by them, and I can completely understand that. But regardless of that, I would expect Tottenham to win that one quite comfortably because, unfortunately, despite an early start, a decent start, I should say, in the early years of the Premier League for Coventry, it's kind of gone south ever since they got relegated. Obviously, they went from the likes of Dion Dublin and Darren Huckabee to really kind of struggling in what is the third tier of English football. They've had some good young players, but unfortunately, as the case is for a lot of teams that suffer this fate, you kind of have to sell those players off incredibly quick just to fund yourselves more than anything, just to keep things going. And as a consequence of that, I think that Tottenham will just have too much for them, regardless of whether Phyllis Bowers decides to rest a few players or not.
Ah, you're a miserable one, Christian. We were hoping you were going to come out with a mighty Coventry win away down at White Hart Lane. The pick of the ties, really, it comes on Sunday for me. Swansea at home to Arsenal. This draw was made just after Arsenal were well and truly thumped at the Emirates by Swansea 2-0. Since then, they've started to find their form a bit. They're unbeaten in four. They've obviously been smashing the goals in, putting seven past Newcastle, and so is it going to be a different Arsenal side to the one that faced Swansea in terms of the mentality of it? And with the potential of Walcott pretty much wrapped up, or supposedly back in talks, will that change anything? Will that change the atmosphere for Arsenal? Is it going to be a completely different game to what we saw a few weeks back?
Well, I think you have to remember, they did stuff Newcastle quite conventionally, but then at Southampton it seemed like a regression of sorts. And I think in some ways, The problems of Arsenal as a team are also the same problems that their star striker is suffering, consistency. He clearly has talent. I think we can't contest that. He has potential, and it's that same potential that saw him earn a £12 million move to Arsenal. But whether he can do that over 4 weeks across a month, that has always been the question and still is the question. And for someone who wants £100,000 a week, for someone who wants to be the heir to Thierry Henry's throne, he needs to prove that he's got that. There are certain inclinations that he has it in him, the style, some of the things he does. I don't think he's nearly as complete a player as Henry, but there's enough potential there to make you think, well, it could be. And the problem Arsenal have is, that's a lot of money for them. It shouldn't be realistically £100,000, but it is in the context of their wage structure. So garnering that deal and validating it takes a lot of consideration. And you also have to convince him as well, because he's playing incredibly well. And as a consequence of that, a lot of teams are sniffing around him, as you would fully expect. A lot of teams that realize they can get him for free and maybe give him an increased signing bonus as a sweetener to get him through the line. So it's an incredibly difficult position for Arsenal to face. The fact they have Swansea coming up, I think Swansea are in a different place to when they went to the Emirates. They were very much at the height of their powers. I think, as I said with Villa, Swansea are in transition, but a much more advanced stage of it. They're essentially moving into a formation that I think is less defensively sound, but far more potent in the attacking sense. They like to play the triangles much higher up the field, in much better spaces, and meet you as the fulcrum of that. The problem they have, you could argue much like Arsenal, is that when that fulcrum is missing, for Arsenal it's Walcott, for Swansea it's Michu, there isn't a great deal in reserve. Now, Danny Graham obviously got the equaliser against Villa, but he's not nearly as able to link the play up and bring the wide players in the same way that Michu can. So it's important for Swansea to try and essentially give themselves another option, another outlet and another style. They could definitely do that at Arsenal. I think the Cup's a fantastic chance to maybe bring someone like Schechter in or even Danny Graham and try something completely different just to see how it works, just to go in there with the freedom knowing that if you lose, there's not really going to be a huge backlash because you're at Arsenal. one of the better teams in the league, and it's only the FA Cup in that sense.
I mean, Swansea are obviously one of those sides, like many of the sides in the Premier League, that kind of have all been saying we'll reach 40 points and then we'll start thinking about other targets elsewhere, obviously wanting to have Premier League safety. Arsenal need a trophy, though. Arsene Wenger, do you expect him to, with the FA Cup this year, especially after the disappointment of going out to Bradford in the League Cup, do you expect Arsenal to be going all guns blazing for this trophy this season? Because they're not going to win the Premier League. That's a fact, pretty much.
Yeah, they're probably mathematically still in it, but I think realistically it's unlikely they're able to do that. I would hope, if I was an Arsenal fan, that he's going to, because it's that monkey on the back, if you will, of not having won a trophy in so long. And I think when you do that, regardless of what it is, it could be an egg and spoon race, as long as it's silverware, then at least you can kind of banish that record. And while it won't necessarily, you know, increase the chances of you getting a star player through the door because you've won the FA Cup, at least from a statistical point of view, it banished something. So you can start to focus on getting back up to that top tier, back up to challenging for the Premier League on a consistent basis, and even looking like you could genuinely do it. Because even when Arsenal were close, or have been close in recent years, I think we can all admit we've probably gone there with a bit of uncertainty whether they could even keep this up, and belief that eventually they would fall away. And Arsenal themselves need to decide what they want to do now, because I think there's a lot of the voices of discontent at Wenger grow stronger every time something goes wrong, and I think it would be horrendous if he went out on such a bad note. He should be afforded the kind of quiet parade that he deserves to leave that club, given all he's done for them. And then they need to decide, okay, well, what are we going to do next? They've obviously been linked with Guardiola. But I don't think that's really going to happen. I would be surprised if it did, personally. If it did, it would probably see a linking to the style that's been prevalent, whereas I think they need to be a bit more ambitious. Just start going for players maybe who are a little bit older and who cost a little bit more, because they have the financial clout to do so.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because I've been reading today, there's plenty of rumours coming around the internet that Arsenal have launched a bid for David Villa. A £13.8 million bid, and have said that they're willing to meet his £110,000 a week wage demands. If David Villa could potentially be coming to Arsenal, what does this do for the Theo Walcott situation now? And Oliver Giroud as well. Will Villa slot in and they'll play two up front? And is this a big enough step for a club like Arsenal to show that they are wanting to get it back into that next level and spend the money to get back into the top three?
On paper, it seems it, but the problem is David Villa is 31. With all due respect to David Villa, a wonderful player who has achieved some amazing things, I would argue he's on the downward end of his trajectory in terms of his career. He's probably hit the peak of that while at Barcelona. And I think the fact that they're even entertaining any kind of offer tells you where he's at in the context of that club. Giroud, I think, is a completely different striker. And if you get Villa, I would look to play him off Giroud without question, because he himself has had a difficult bedding-in period, and you have to wonder that maybe Villa would suffer the same, because English football is a different beast to Spanish football. We're well aware of that, and that's not saying it's a better league. It's just it asks different things of its players, so it takes time to adjust to. For Walcott, if Villa comes, then it lessens his likelihood of playing through the centre, you would think, because I don't see how those two could play together up top, and then again it marginalises Giroud, so it brings its own issues. I think, personally, if Arsenal are looking to get someone, try for the likes of Lewis Holtby. I saw them linked to Huntelaar. He's 29, so he's not much younger than Villa, but he's still at a decent age. And he's never been too reliant on pace, Huntelaar. So he's the kind of player that you could see getting older, in the mould of Bergkamp almost, and not see a huge fall off. The problem is that it seems as if Holtby's all but guaranteed to join Tottenham, which is a blow for them. I mean, I know they weren't hugely linked with him, but in my opinion, that's the kind of player they should be looking towards.
What does that Holtby move? It seems Tottenham making, as you say, a big push for him, and if he's going to go anywhere, it looks like it'll be White Hart Lane. What does that Lewis Holtby move do for Gylfi Sigurdsson, for Dempsey, for Dembele? Does that really worry them? Because Tottenham have just built this incredible kind of attacking midfield with Bale and Lennon, and then a whole host of choices to play in the middle. Who makes way for Holtby?
I think it's more likely to be Dempsey. I think Dembele can play deeper, and he has the kind of, in the same way Modric could do those surging runs, Dembele can do it much quicker and with much more strength because of his build. And I think when you spend 15 million on someone, he's there for the long term. I think that Sigurdsson was probably bought just because they wanted someone like Van der Vaart. Unfortunately, he hasn't been able to deliver that because I think he's a different player. I personally, if I was Sigurdsson, would have gone to Swansea regardless of whether Rodgers was there. If he was so desperate to work with Rodgers, possibly even go to Liverpool. But I think Tottenham, he was always in trouble because they have more financial clout. They're looking to challenge for the Champions League, and I just don't think that he's there yet. He has the potential, without question, but I don't see him at that level yet. Now, Holtby is an amazing player. I think he's a very talented English, funnily enough, player in some ways. So you could, Tottenham securing young English talent, as always. He says tongue firmly in cheek. But it's Dempsey, I think, needs to worry, because this move for him was, it was seen as the last big chance for him, because he's not getting younger. He spent a lot of time at Fulham ingratiating himself into English football, and he almost hit the peak of his form just before he left. And he hasn't really been afforded a great deal of opportunity at Tottenham. He's been coming on from the bench, and he's done well. He's scored goals. But I think for him, he wanted to be a bigger player in that. And he's obviously wanted to go to a bigger club, but I think he has the confidence in his ability to want to do more. And I think from an American perspective, you want to see him playing week in, week out. He's a huge part of the US national side moving forward. And because of that, you think, well, if he's not going to get the game time and Holtby's coming in the summer, maybe it's wise for him to have a chat with the club and look to move on to somewhere, even if it means dropping to a side that are smaller than Tottenham, similar to the size of Fulham, without wanting them to do them a great disrespect, because I think that works great for him. Obviously, he can't really go back to Fulham. I think the bridges there are most firmly burned, but I think Everton would take him. If the deal is financially viable enough for them and it isn't too much on a wage or a transfer side, they would definitely take him. And I think, Landon Donovan will happily sell Everton to Clint Dempsey.
Yeah, I think Dempsey well and truly burnt Putney Bridge as he left Craven Cottage when he moved off to Tottenham this year. That's for sure, Christian. Just one very quick last one, because obviously Chelsea have got their man. They've signed Demba Ba from Newcastle. Does Rafa Benitez, who was very coy about it all in midweek after the QPR game, does he play Torres with Demba Ba, or is this a replacement for Fernando Torres?
I think he's more likely to start with this one up top. From having watched Benitez quite closely since he joined Chelsea, he's been very eager to have three creative types sort of free roaming behind a central striker, which for the main part has been Fernando Torres. Now the problem is those three all want to play in the middle. Victor Moses works best out wide. I think Mata probably works best in the centre and Hazard on the left, but Hazard and Moses want to play where Mata is playing. So the consequence of that is had to have them kind of free roaming and moving about, which is fantastic when it works, because it makes them almost impossible to mark. But it also means you have to put kind of two very concentrated midfielders behind them who are going to stay in that position and hold. But David Luiz will do that sometimes, which is amazing to say about a centre-back, that sometimes he will defend. but it's true. Sometimes he will stay and do what you can tell him to do. Other times he'll rampage up the field as if they're chasing a goal in the last minute. For Demba Ba, he can play up top on his own. I think he doesn't want to play out wide. That's been made abundantly clear, and I don't think they'll play him out wide. I think he'll be used for a replacement for Torres when things are a little bit soft and when he's feeling a bit tired. Because Lukaku, I think, is still going to be away for there for a good 18 months. I think they see his development far more long-term, and as a consequence, they've brought Demba Ba in. The problem Ba has, I think, is that he was very keen to be the star at Newcastle. And when Papi Cisse joined and started scoring goals, I wouldn't say there was an envy or a jealousy there, but there was certain just little moments where you thought, yeah, you don't really like being marginalised by this at all. Mm. You don't appreciate this at all. And I think that while he's at a much bigger club, I don't think he'll appreciate the fact that Torres will always be afforded the chances, partly because of how much they paid for him.
It'll be very interesting to see indeed how Demba Ba fits in, and he will be available for Chelsea when they take on Southampton in the FA Cup today. Christian, an absolute pleasure having you back on the show once again. Thoroughly enjoyed the last few moments when we spoke before the end of 2012, and we look forward to getting you back on the show as much as possible in this new season, mate. Thank you so much for taking some time out and joining us, mate.
Ah, no worries. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Cheers, boss. And we look forward to getting you back as soon as possible. Christian Henage there from ESPN.com joining us and talking to us about all things FA Cup and the English transfer window as well here on World Football Daily Friday edition. We're going to take a very quick break on the show. When we come back, we'll be chatting more about the FA Cup and getting into everything that's coming your way around Europe this weekend as Serie A and La Liga return as well. We'll be back in just a moment.